How are you this morning?
Yeah,
a good deal warmer than it was yesterday morning. It was I had 12 below yesterday morning, so it's a good deal warmer today. It was actually around 20 at my house, so that was good. Felt pretty good, downright balmy. Today we got kind of a lengthy passage. We're going to be in Exodus chapter 16 this morning. Exodus chapter 16. And we're going to see bread from heaven. Of course, it's the story of the manna coming for the first time. As I say, it's kind of a lengthy passage, so I'll try my best to read it pretty fast. You listen pretty fast, and we'll get through it. Exodus chapter 16 starts like this. And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then said the Lord unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, and that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. And Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel, At even, then ye shall know that the Lord hath brought you out from the land of Egypt. And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of the Lord, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord. And what are we that ye murmur against us? And Moses said, This shall be, when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Lord heareth your murmurings which ye murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. And Moses spake unto Aaron, Say unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, Come near before the Lord, for he hath heard your murmurings. And it came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, At even ye shall eat flesh, and in the morning ye shall be filled with bread, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God. And it came to pass that at even the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay round about the host. And when the dew that lay was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness there lay a small round thing, as small as the hoarfrost on the ground. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, It is manna, for they wist not what it was. And Moses said unto them, This is the bread which the Lord hath given you to eat. This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. Gather of it every man according to his eating, an omer for every man. According to the number of your persons, take ye every man of them which are in his tents. And the children of Israel did so, and gathered some more, some less. And when they did meet it with an omer, he that gathered much had nothing over, and he that gathered little had no lack. They gathered every man according to his eating. And Moses said, Let no man leave of it till the morning. Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses, and some of them left of it until the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was wroth with them. And they gathered it every morning, every man according to his eating, and when the sun waxed hot, it melted. And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said unto them, This is that which the Lord hath said, Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye will bake today, and seethe that which ye will seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning. And they laid it up till the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. And Moses said, Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said unto Moses, How long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath. Therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. And the house of Israel called the name thereof manna. And it was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And Moses said, This is the thing which the Lord commandeth. Fill an omer of it to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread wherewith I fed you in the wilderness, when I brought you forth from the land of Egypt. And Moses said unto Aaron, Take a pot, and put an omer full of manna therein, and lay it up before the Lord to be kept for your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. And the children of Israel did eat manna 40 years, until they came to the land inhabited. They did eat manna until they came into the borders of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is the tenth part of an ephah. Let's have a word of prayer before we get to looking at this. Lord, we do thank you for this day. We do thank you that it's a bit warmer. We thank you that it was pleasant enough. We can come out here and we can gather in your name. We can look to your word and we can encourage one another with it. Help us to take that word, apply it to our lives, and to become more like you each and every day. Show us what you'd have for us. Guide us through it. In your name, amen. So it's a rather lengthy passage, as I say. Today we're seeing the second great provision of God for his people. He gives manna to the people. Just like last time, last week we were looking, and remember they didn't have water, and the water that they did find they couldn't drink, and God provided that. God made the bitter water sweet at Marah. And just like last week, this is an answer to a basic human need, that of food this time. Last time it was water, this time it's food. Also like last week, when it didn't seem that God was going to meet this need in time, the people responded, but not in faith and prayer, like we probably ought to, but instead they responded with a complaint against their leadership. But again, God doesn't condemn them here. He didn't condemn them last week. He doesn't condemn them here for their lack of faith. But he does, in verse 28, he condemns them for their slowness to obey his instructions. God basically says, I gave you clear instruction here and you didn't listen. When are you going to start listening to what I say, God says. He doesn't ridicule them for their lack of faith. That lack of faith, God seems to recognize, that's just a human nature problem. He doesn't ridicule that. But he does ask for obedience. I think that's a significant lesson. This passage also lets us know what God's purpose was in this whole passage. Let's see. Bottom of verse 4, he says, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. That's the whole reason why this happens. That's the whole reason, this is what I said last week, the whole reason why all of these tests happen. Will you obey the law or not? See, God is preparing these folks for a time when he is going to ask them to accept the terms of his covenant. That's when the law comes down in chapter 20, 21. Moses goes up into Mount Sinai, gets the Ten Commandments, and comes down. That's the covenant with the people. Are you going to accept the terms of this covenant? Are you going to obey my law? God's giving some simple tests here. Will you obey me before I give you the law and make a covenant with you? If they can't obey in the little things, there's a very good chance that they're not going to obey in the bigger things, right? Right. You know, God still does that sort of thing with you and I today. Yeah. Have you noticed that? Sometimes the struggles that you may face today are to prepare you to tackle something bigger tomorrow. That's why you're struggling today, because there's something bigger you may have to face later. That's encouraging, isn't it? Yeah. So in the first section here, right up in verse 1, we get a very important time marker. Sometimes we skim right through this stuff and it gets kind of boring. It says, "And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai." So we got a great location here. "In the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt." This is exactly 1 month after the first Passover. Remember, the Passover was the 15th day of the first month. This is the 15th day of the second month. Exactly 1 month after the Exodus. Notice the locations given. It's given as the wilderness of Sin between Elim and Sinai. We know specifically where this happened. This is very easy. It's in the southwestern region of the Sinai Peninsula. And here, once again, the people are faced with death. And once again, Yahweh delivers them. This time, it isn't a plague, per se, like it was a month ago. But rather, this is just an ordinary situation of supply and need. Can God help here? Will God want to help here? Can He be trusted to help them when your attitude may not be the best? And of course, the answer to every one of those is yes. Yes, God can help. Yes, God wants to help. And yes, He will help even if your attitude is not right. That's just the kind of God He is. And just like with the Passover a month prior, this is going to be a memorial to all future generations. The Passover was something that the Jews still remember to this day, and the manna is something that they still remember to this day. 5 days a week, God is going to give them a provision of manna. And on the sixth day, He's going to give them a double provision. On the seventh day, there will be none at all. This is the rules. This is how it's going to shake down, God says. Now, I got to say, Charlie Minkler was inspiring me, and I had to get some reference from him on this, too. He and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about just the kind of quantity we're talking about here. Right at the very end of chapter 16, it says that they were collecting an omer. Now, an omer is a tenth part of an ephah. An omer is a little over 2 quarts, about 2.5 quarts for simple math. So I was doing a little bit of calculation, me and Charlie were talking. On a normal day, we're talking your everyday Monday through Thursday delivery, this is 622 10-wheel dump trucks of manna. So I had to refer to Charlie because I don't know exactly what a 10-wheel dump truck carries. So 622 10-wheel dump trucks coming. And then on Friday, 1,244. 1,244 dump trucks on Friday. That's a lot to pick up. That's assuming 2 million people. Now, that's an assumption I'm making. It could have been a little bit more. We're estimating the people to be somewhere between 2 and 3 million. So this is no small change miracle going on here. I hope you realize that. Putting it into perspective a little bit. This is no small miracle. And a jar of manna is going to be saved to remind the people that God can, in fact, defeat death. That's exactly what the Passover was all about. That's why the Jews still celebrate Passover to this day, and that's why they preserved a jar of manna. My God can defeat death. Now, the response of the people to this dilemma was even more sarcastic and more hysterical than the last one that we looked at last week. They basically say that if God is just going to kill us anyway, then why didn't He do it in Egypt and at least let us die with a full stomach? That's basically what they tell Him. So see, what's going on in their minds is the people are starting to idealize their memories of Egypt. They're starting to idealize their, you know, it wasn't so bad in Egypt. At least we knew where our meals were coming from. This is a month later. Now, human beings have always had that kind of tendency, haven't they? You and I still have that today. We tend to diminish the troubles of the past, and we tend to magnify the good things of the past. Oh, back in the good old days, we didn't have to worry. Yeah, well, you had all kinds of other things too, didn't you? And you start to magnify the troubles that you're facing today, and you minimize the good things. Well, at least we're not, at least it wasn't 45 below zero. It was only 12 below yesterday, you know. I was complaining about how cold and windy it was yesterday. Man, I can't even weld. My welding mask was freezing up. I had frost on the inside of my glass. My breath was frosting on it. And I was complaining about that. Well, at least it wasn't 45 below. It's not so bad. Human beings have been the same all along, haven't they? And in this particular case, the people start to be ungrateful for their deliverance. They're ungrateful that they were delivered. Can you imagine? They also forget that it was God, it was not Moses, that led them out of Egypt. It was God that led them out of Egypt. If they'd only thought about it for a moment, they might have realized that the same person who got them into this situation can surely get them out of this situation, right? Isaiah had to remind the people of that again, too. Let me turn quick to Isaiah 41. We've got a little bit of time. Isaiah chapter 41. Don't bother turning if you don't want to. I'll turn there myself. Read a couple of verses, 21 to 29. This is Isaiah reminding the same Israelite nation the same thing. Produce your cause, saith the Lord. Bring forth your strong reason, saith the King of Jacob. Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare us things for to come. Show the things which are to come hereafter, that we may know that ye are gods. Yea, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together. Behold, ye are nothing, and your work of naught, an abomination is he that chooseth you. I have raised up one from the north, and he shall come. From the rising of the sun shall he come upon my name, and he shall come upon princes as upon mortar, as the potter treadeth the clay. Who hath declared from the beginning that we may know, and before time that we may say, he is righteous? Yea, there is none that showeth. Yea, there is none that declareth. Yea, there is none that heareth your words. The first shall say to Zion, behold, behold them, and I will give to Jerusalem one that bringeth good tidings. And I beheld, and there was no man, even among them, and there was no counselor, that when I asked of them could answer a word. Behold, they are all vanity, their works are nothing, their molten images are wind and confusion. Behold my servant whom I uphold, mine elect in whom my soul delighteth. I have put my spirit upon him. I will bring forth judgment on the Gentiles. What Isaiah is saying here in this case is God raised up the king from the north, that is King Nebuchadnezzar, came in, destroyed the country, but then God will destroy him. God's using a tool. God makes the situation, and he will get them out of the situation. God allowed the Babylonians to capture them. He will surely bring them out of that Babylonian captivity. God brought them out of the land of Egypt. He will surely bring them through this little problem. And Moses realized where their real problem was. He mentions it back in verse 7 and 8. He says, and in the morning, then you shall see the glory of the Lord, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord. And what are we that you murmur against us? Why are you complaining about us? And Moses said, this shall be, when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Lord heareth your murmurings, which you murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. Moses is showing the people here that their complaints, which are leveled against him and against Aaron, are really against the Lord. And did you know that that's true every single time you complain? That's true every single time you complain. Think about it a minute here with me. Who is in control of your circumstances? God. God is in control of your circumstances. So when you complain about your circumstances, who are you really complaining about?
God.
Exactly. That puts a different face on things, doesn't it? So these challenges in the wilderness not only show the reality of God's care, but they are a preparation, sorry, for the receiving of God's instructions. God is just about to give them the law. God is preparing them to receive the law. They're not ready for the law yet. The only appropriate response to God's provision is obedience. If God provides, you ought to obey. Simple as that. And God here provides provision in the context that he requires his people to believe that what he says is true and then obey him. That's all he really asks. Verses 4 and 5 point to this in that the food is to be gathered according to God's very clear instructions. Verses 4 and 5 give us those instructions. I'm not going to read them again. But they're very clear instructions on how this will be gathered. There will be no hoarding. Just all that says is that you can't trust God for the next day's provision. And every seventh day, they will be reminded that it wasn't their work that provided for them, but it was God's grace instead. That's what the Sabbath is all about. Now think with me for a minute. Couldn't God have just dumped huge amounts of food on them whenever? And without all these restrictions? Why, you'll gather so much according to your need, and it'll be one omer, and you're going to gather this, and when the sun comes up, it's all going to wither away. Why all the rules, God? Because he's preparing them for the law. Will you obey me or not, God says. That's why he's giving simple instructions. I am going to drop this stuff on you in the morning. You will gather this much of it. You will not gather any more of it. You won't keep any of it till tomorrow. You will obey my rules. Let's see if you can obey this simple rule. So the people can learn to trust him, don't you see? Now, some people have tried to explain this provision away by natural phenomena. But I hope you realize that 622 dump trucks load of manna is not some kind of sap secretion from a desert bush. I mean, I don't care what commentaries you pick up. It was some secretion from a desert bush. Well, you know what? That sap secretion that they talk about doesn't wither away when the sun comes up. And the Bible pretty clearly says that that happened. So we don't need to explain 622 dump trucks full of manna every single morning, 1,244 dump trucks on Friday morning as some little piddling sap leak on a bush for 2 million people. That's not what it was. The timing of the quails showing up and the 40-year duration of this miracle of the manna show that these were no ordinary events. The quails showed up right on schedule when God said. That doesn't happen. I can't even hit a partridge when I don't know how many shots I fired at partridges this season. I saw a lot of them. Didn't hit a single one of them. The fact that these quail just showed up on time, as scheduled, is a miracle itself. The fact that the manna showed up every morning for 40 years is a miracle. My God can intervene in creation and bless his people in extraordinary ways. But God doesn't come across with a miracle like that every day, does he? God doesn't come across with a miracle like that every day. He does it once in a while to show that he does care and that he does provide for us. And that's why they saved a pot of that manna. Because, you know, sometimes you and I have a tendency to forget how God has provided in the past, don't we? And in times like that, it's awful good to have something we can look back to, isn't it? I remember that time when God provided for me when I didn't know how he was going to. And that's why they saved that pot of manna. You know, there were three things inside the Ark of the Covenant. We're reaching way back to a long, long time ago. Does anybody remember what the three things were that are inside the Ark of the Covenant? One of them is the pot of manna. We know that one. That's today's lesson. Jake, put his hand up first. The Aaron's staff, that's right. The tablets of stone, that's right. Very good. Jake gets the gold star this morning. Those are the three things that were inside the Ark of the Covenant. And each one of them is a reminder of something that God did. We're going to see them as we go through. Now let's look at this miracle from a slightly different angle here. By this miracle here today, the manna coming, God also gave some instructions on how to observe the Sabbath. I hope you noticed that. By the way, this is the first mention of the term Sabbath in the Bible. And I believe that's very significant. It is true that back in Genesis, we saw that God rested on the seventh day. But this is the first description of the Sabbath as such. I think that's very important. Now, the lesson here is very clear. God cares for the needs of each of his people, but he cannot tolerate greed. That's a major lesson that's going on right here. You see, human nature is to believe that if some is good, then more is better, right? That's a law of human nature. This is why, let me explain it a little bit here, this is why we amass so much stuff that we don't need and we will never use. Right? You all know what it is. All you got to do is whip the door open on your garage. You know what I'm talking about. You've gathered stuff all your life, things that you'll never need and you'll never use. And the root of that is pride. And you ask me why. How is that pride? It's a belief that you can be self-sufficient. It's a belief that you can be self-sufficient. I can provide against that day. And I'm going to provide against that day by saving this stuff. God is trying to teach against that by causing the manna to rot every day of the week, except on Saturday. Saturday it didn't rot. So God, there's two things going on here. God supernaturally caused it to rot the next morning, and he supernaturally caused it not to rot on Saturday morning. Do you see the scope of the miracle that's going on here? This is no simple, easily explained natural phenomena. Now we see by verse 21 that the people did begin to learn and did begin to obey some of God's rules. Now, when the people realized that they had twice as much on Friday as they needed for the day, they got a little bit confused in verse 22. Let's look at it. I've got to flip the page. Chapter 16 is on two pages in this Bible. And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses, "Hey, Moses, how come we got to gather twice as much today? How come there's so much today?" So the people are confused. Apparently, although God told this to Moses, that this would be the case, he told him that back, way back in verse 5, Moses apparently didn't bother telling the people. So the people got a little bit confused. There's been communication breakdown in leadership forever. It's not just your boss. Now, here Moses gives some instructions on how the Sabbath is going to be observed. The people's, by the way, here I'm going to make a little side trail here. The people's surprise at having so much provision on Friday leads me to believe that these folks had never even considered celebrating the Sabbath prior to this. They have never even considered celebrating the Sabbath before this. This backs up my point that this is the first mention of the Sabbath in the Bible. Also, this derails the Seventh-day Adventist argument that celebrating the Sabbath has been from day one of history throughout. These people have never observed the Sabbath at all up to this point. They are very confused when the whole idea of the Sabbath is brought to them at this point. This is, verse 23 says that this is going to be the rest of the Holy Sabbath. The rest of the Holy Sabbath. It is a holy day set apart for the Lord. God has given one day in which human beings don't have to work. That's what he's explaining to this. Now imagine this in the mind of a former slave. You're a 1 month ago, you were a slave in Egypt. Every day you labor for your master with no say, no rest. Now God, in his grace and mercy, is offering you one day where you do not have to labor. He will provide everything for you the day prior. Imagine that in your mind as you are a slave. But also consider, this is not a day of mindless wastefulness. This is not a day of mindless wastefulness. This is a rest unto the Lord. We are to remember the Lord as we enjoy the blessing of his rest. Now, verse 24 is great. Let me read verse 24 again. And they laid it up till the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. So the people obeyed. They get the rules. This is the rules for the Sabbath. You will lay up extra for tomorrow. And the people obeyed, and they put some manna aside for the next day. They are finally learning to obey. Up to this point, they have not obeyed. When God makes a command, the people disobey. You can count on it. God makes a command, they disobey. God makes a command, they disobey. This time, they do what God says. And look, it didn't rot. It didn't stink. It doesn't grow worms. We obeyed, and everything was great. Yeah. Exactly. Human beings have been the same all along, haven't they? But notice verse 27 says this wasn't across the board. It says, and it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. They did not obey God's rules, and look, now it looks like it's going to be another hungry day. And that's the time when God gets angry at them. Do you see what verse 28 says? And the Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? The people who obeyed the law, everything was swell. Look, the manna is good. We've got something to eat today. And we get the added benefit of we do not have to go out and gather anything. We get to rest today and our food's good. Wow, what a God. The people who did not listen, the food that they gathered, their time was wasted and the food rotted. They didn't have anything to gather. They had another hungry day. How long refuse you to keep my commandments and my laws? Now that may sound familiar to you, because that's an awful lot like what God said to Pharaoh back in chapter 10 and verse 3. You refuse to obey my laws, Pharaoh, and it's not going to go well for you. You see, God is very patient. God is very patient. He's much more patient than I am. But his patience isn't without limits, is it? And these people have just pushed God to the limit. This is a simple instruction, people, God says. And you can't obey? So now we come to a conclusion to today's situation. We get a little bit of description here. The manna tasted sweet on the tongue, it says. It tasted like wafers with honey. But the real sweetness of the manna was that it was sufficient to sustain the people all the way from the Red Sea all the way to the Promised Land for 40 years. That's provision. That is sweet. Did you know that God's provision is always sweet? God's provision is always sweet. Psalm 34 and verse 8 says, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. I think David was thinking about this when he said it. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Now, I got one last thought for you. We're at the very end of the chapter, verses 31 on. We got like this separate paragraph here. We get a description of what the manna looked like and tasted like in verse 31. We get a provision for making a memorial out of it, verses 32, 33. We get to see what they were going to do with that memorial in verse 34. We are told how long the manna lasted in verse 35. And we get a description of an obsolete system of measure that they used to measure it in verse 36. 5 points going on here. Now, what's the significance of all that? Some people have pointed out that verse 34 can't possibly be true, because the Ark of the Testimony, or the Ark of the Covenant, hasn't even been built yet. We haven't even got the instructions on how to build this yet. How could they possibly have put it into the Ark of the Covenant? They'll also point out to you that the manna's only just begun today. How can you possibly know that it's going to last till 40 years from now? And they'll try to say that that's a contradiction in the Bible. So let's try and resolve this. Think with me for just a moment. I mean, it's ludicrous to even consider that that's a contradiction in the Bible, and here's why. Do you really think that Moses was writing the book of Exodus down as each day went by? Today we got manna. Yesterday we got quails last night. No, he's writing this down after the fact. This is a parenthetical paragraph here that says this is what happened after the fact. Moses put these verses here to explain the situation to the readers. There's no need of going off the deep end on this paragraph in the Bible. It's really not difficult to explain. But some people do. They really get bent out of shape on this. The point here of this entire chapter is that God will provide for his people if we simply trust and obey. Well, the people today don't trust God either. It's the same story. If we trust God, God will provide. That's the lesson. Jake, since you got the gold star this morning, you mind closing in a word of prayer?